You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. I'm your host, Sophia, and I'm bringing back a very popular guest today. He's been on this show with me a couple of times, and he's slowly kind of taking my head and turning it around so that it opens up and understands this enormous new playing field that all Americans have available to them, but that most of them just don't want to play on. And that is called the field of income tax. So my guest is Pete Hendrickson, and I'm looking at Pete's newsletter right now, and there is a line posted here that says, "No one else is going to do this for you." It's as though when a baby learns to walk, nobody else is going to walk for us. We have to go through the painful process of learning how to balance on two legs and moving them, and then it frees us up to do all kinds of other things. Imagine if you had to crawl on all fours all of your life. What would you be able to do? Not a whole lot. And I feel that this income tax freedom is a similar sort of analogy. We can make ourselves so much more, I guess the only word is free, in our lives if we really begin to understand and do for ourselves what the law provides. So, Pete, are you on the line? Can you rescue me with some of your well-practiced ways of inspiring people?
Sophia, I am here, and thanks very much for having me back. It's a great pleasure to be back with you. Your analogy is a great analogy in two different respects. One, no one else can do it for you. No one else can make that baby walk. Someone else could walk behind it holding its hands all its life, but just as you said, how much can you get done if you're crawling all the time? How much can you get done if somebody else is holding your hands for you to allow you to walk? It's something that each person has to do for themselves. And the other thing is that understanding the reality of the income tax is more than just a matter of getting free of a blighting as much as 45% drain on your wealth and property. When you understand the tax, you necessarily also understand pretty much everything about the relationship, the legal relationship between state and citizen or state and individual. And that liberates you on a lot of other fronts as well. So the rest of them aren't all as beneficial from a wealth control standpoint necessarily, but they're very beneficial from a freedom and a liberty standpoint. And that's pretty important. This astonishing liberation is available to anybody that wants to go to the trouble of getting it. But
right, and we have our break, Pete, so we'll be back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. This is Sophia, your host, and my guest today is Pete Hendrickson, back again to make us excited about income tax. Pete, I have to say that after I talk to you on the phone or read something that you've sent out, particularly if I have a conversation with you, I get very excited and I want to hurry and file something. You know what I mean?
I appreciate you saying that, Sophia. We're one of the key realities of this whole subject is the training, the conditioning, really the better word, that all Americans receive during the course of their lifetimes, really. It starts early. And we're conditioned to dread the whole concept, to fear the whole concept, in many ways we view it accurately. We view it as this enormous imposition, this enormous bad thing happening in our lives. But part of the purpose of that is to keep us from looking closely at it, to just do it, kind of doing what we're told and moving on, and that's what most people do. When we have an understanding of how it really works and what's really going on, it becomes transformed into an act of liberation. It becomes transformed into actualizing our freedom. You know, it's been said, I can't recall who said it, but it's well said, that, you know, you're as free as you mean to be. Your freedom does not depend on someone else's attitude or actions. It depends on your own. It depends on your state of mind and your sense of purpose. And it is transformational to turn the corner and begin acting on your own behalf and liberating yourself.
You've urged people to make videos about their experience, no matter what stage they're in, and you have some suggested scripts that they can follow. I guess they can tweak these as they want to. But one of them here is, I'm so-and-so. I learned the fascinating truth about the income tax at LostHorizons.com. Then I filed a tax return knowledgeably for the first time in my life. I haven't gotten my money back yet, but as soon as that accurate return went in the mail, I got back my dignity as a confident, self-governing, free American. And that's the thing here. I really believe that it does that for you. It makes you feel different. It's as though you took a pill and your entire consciousness changed and changed itself, because the act, as you say, is what liberates us, and we have to participate in it ourselves and do it. Now, the other day I met on the beach apparently a world-famous football player. Now, we call it soccer here in America. He was from the UK, and he's retired, and he was bouncing a ball around on his knees and he looked like somebody from the circus. He was that good.
He was juggling, sure.
Yeah, and so I Googled him. He told me his name, and I thought, you know, I don't know anything about this guy. I never heard of him. He didn't seem to mind. It's not my world, soccer. And I read about all the different games he had played in. He was apparently the captain of the UK team at one time, and he's a really enormously talented person. And I was in awe, and articles written in the Daily Mail that I scanned all talked about his talent, how apparent it was early in his life. And I thought to myself, all right, so each of us has some greatness, and I'm relating it to the income tax because it just struck me as I introduced you that our talent in this regard is really our courage.
Mm-hmm.
We each have the capacity to show courage, and it does mean jumping into dark water, because you are going into the unknown. You don't know how they're going to treat you. And I want to speak today, one of the things I'd like to bring up with you, Pete, is this frivolous argument. Because a friend of mine who filed his returns properly for the first time in his life, he had to do like back filings for a couple of years at the command of the IRS. And he did them with the 4852s. As he learned from your book, and they immediately sent him a frivolous return letter.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told you, and I'm going to tell the listeners, this guy is brave. He is a 9/11 truther. He is out there. He's got the bullhorn. He's absolutely fearless. And he's a large person, too, which helps in life. And he had to put the phone down to vomit when he was telling me about the frivolous return letter and reading it to me. That's how nervous and scared he was.
Yeah.
And in this letter, they tell you, well, we're fining you $5,000 for a frivolous return, and if you respond by filing another such return or document, we will simply ramp up and add another $5,000 for every time you send us one of these kinds of responses.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel him terrified.
Yeah. One thing that's important to understand is the notice. I don't have that notice in front of me, of course, so I can't speak to its language directly. But I see lots of these things, and it's almost certain that the notice didn't actually say, we're fining you $5,000. It suggested that $5,000 could be applied somehow under certain circumstances to certain people or to certain kinds of filings, but it didn't say, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Smith, you personally now have a $5,000 debt, and we're going to come take your stuff to collect it. It absolutely, virtually certainly did not say that, nor did it mean that. The service is the IRS, the tax agencies, and it isn't just the IRS, but some of the state agencies as well, are very good at creating, they're well-practiced, they're decades practiced, at creating very intimidating-appearing, very scary-looking, bluff-heavy pieces of paper that they send out at no charge to themselves, of course, because they have, you know, franking privileges, more or less. And they do that in an effort to intimidate people who have learned the truth about this subject into reversing themselves, because they're the only ones who can do it. They're the only ones that can change the effect of a proper, accurate, honest filing. It's only the filer that can do it. A filing is testimony, and only the testifier can reverse themselves and remove the beneficial effect, the liberating effect of having done, having acted in accordance with the law, and essentially get back down on his or her knees or back into the pen in the barn and close the door behind them. They're the only ones that can do that. So the tax agencies, whose mission is to ensure that the revenue keeps coming in by hook or by crook, they're going to do anything they can to make that person, to persuade that person, to induce that person to reverse themselves. And these scary notices are the chief mechanism by which this is done. I have actually I've been collecting for the course of this past year on my website at losthorizons.com examples of these notices, the notices themselves are posted, and a dissection of what is actually said in these notices, and in most cases, a case history of what happened over the course of time in relation to these notices. The series is called the Every Which Way But Loose series, and it really is quite comical. I present it in something of a lighthearted way, because when you understand what's actually going on here, there is a certain element of humor in it. It's an effort to obfuscate, to dodge the law, to suggest things to be true that aren't true and that aren't actually said. They're simply implied, and there's a reliance on the implication and the fear factor. That it's a reliance on, we're gonna suggest something with our language, and we're gonna rely on the reader to be so trained to fear that they will simply read the worst possible thing into this without actually reading the words themselves, and be intimidated accordingly.
So, Pete, what they're really trying to do is recondition us back to where we were before
exactly
we filed
correct.
This knowledgeable return.
That's exactly correct. And in fact, you know, I just in the last couple of weeks had occasion to post a court case related to the frivolous concept. Frivolous, by the way, for those in the audience that don't know, is a technical term. It doesn't mean silly or funny or ridiculous or anything like that. It is a technical term. There's a statutory definition of what qualifies as a frivolous return. And essentially, it is a return that is self-contradictory. It either is insufficient in the information it provides so that the conclusions that are drawn on the affidavit, and bear in mind, the return is just an affidavit. It's subject to the rules of affidavits. They have to have certain things. They have to follow a certain format in order to be technically sound. And one of the things is that any conclusions that are drawn have to be supported by supporting material elsewhere in the affidavit. So they either don't have the elements that are necessary to support the conclusions that are drawn, or they're self-contradictory in some other fashion. And if a return isn't one of those things, it doesn't qualify as a frivolous return. But we just recently, a CTC warrior, a CTC-educated filer, went to tax court because he had been subjected to liens based on these alleged frivolous penalties. Nothing had actually been taken from him, but a notice of lien had been filed in the county in which he lived alleging that he owed $500 penalties based on this frivolous proposition. He went to court. He went to tax court, petitioned tax court, and said, no, my returns are not frivolous, and I want this lien removed. Senior IRS attorney agreed with him. His returns were not frivolous, did not meet the frivolous standard. The tax court judge did the same. Agreed, ruled that they were not frivolous, ordered the liens removed. So it's a game that's going on.
Yes.
And we have to understand
we
that.
We have our short break, and then I have a couple of questions to ask about that. So we'll be back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to Expansion at the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. www.republicbroadcasting.org is the URL. And I am Sophia, your host, and we're listening to Pete Hendrickson explain yet more about this incredible income tax freedom, which is, as I said earlier in the show, it's sort of dark water that nobody really wants to jump into. And until you do it, only then do you find out how free you really are. Now, Pete, you were telling us about a court case. And I think one of the things that happens with people is that they do not want to go to court. They want to avoid this at all costs.
Oh, no, I understand. And this case was anomalous. It is extremely rare. In fact, this is one of less than a handful of occasions in which I've seen someone actually have any kind of concrete effect of these otherwise empty, frivolous assertions come into play. And in this case, you've got 122,000 IRS workers out there. You're going to have a certain number of them that just don't get it. Or push the wrong button on the computer or whatever. Great, that stuff is, in fact, an automated system. This was quite unusual. It generally isn't necessary to undertake any kind of proceeding in court. So, as I said, this was an unusual situation, which is why I was so pleased to see this actually happen, because The I can explain the realities of what the frivolous statute says, once it's explained, it's pretty clear as to exactly what it means and how it works, and I can say all day long about these notices generally being substanceless and empty and efforts to intimidate, but this was the first time I'd actually had occasion to post something where even a tax court and a senior IRS attorney very explicitly acknowledged this reality.
Now, Pete, why would they do that? I know they have to because it's the law, but how did they? I know you weren't there. I'm just asking you. How can they do that? Why do they do it? And what do they look like when they're doing it? And what does it say to them about the rest of their work? For God's sake.
Well, one thing that has to be understood, and those that have stood up and are invoking the law and standing by the law and upholding the law, which is really what all this is about. This is a matter of the fact that we have a legal structure in this country whereby the people are the bosses. The people set up the original charter under which a governing agent is created, and that's all it is an agent of the people. And the charter has specifications and rules and prohibitions and so forth, and we're the ones that hold all the power, both legitimately and realistically. But the fact is that structure has become very heavily invested in what has become a decades-long exploitation of ignorance about that relationship, and in particular, to stick on subject here about the tax, it's not going to give that up easily. It has this huge inertia that is simply kind of rolling along. There's this enormous industry. There are people in private sector, tax attorneys and CPAs and human resource departments and so forth, federal aid organizations, all a huge industry that is reliant on this ongoing exploitation of ignorance. And it is simply not going to, you know, throw up its hands and say, oh, gee, sorry about that, folks. You know, let's move on. Not going to happen that way. What is happening is the weight of all of that inertia is directed at suppressing change, suppressing that liberation, and you know that's why it does require the courage that you were speaking of earlier. you have to want it. Excuse me. You have to want that freedom. You know, Tom Paine makes an observation that I love to keep in my own mind, and that is heaven knows how to put a price on things, and it would be pretty astonishing if liberty had a cheap one. It being so significant, so important, so precious a thing, it has a high price. The high price is vigilance, courage, oftentimes inconvenience. But I'll tell you what, as Thomas Jefferson said, I'd rather be subject to the inconveniences of too much liberty than those attendant upon not enough. And I hope everybody else feels the same way because, you know, we like as we said at the beginning of the show, you know, you've got to walk for yourself. You do. The Constitution doesn't enforce itself. The, you know, our authority as the sovereigns in this relationship with our agent, that doesn't enforce itself. If we're going to go to sleep at the wheel, somebody else is going to start steering, and we have to wake up. And it's you know it means sometimes we have to put aside some comfort, sometimes we have to put aside some convenience, some indulgence. But those are your choices. Either you're going to steer or somebody else is going to steer. And if somebody else is steering, they're going to take you where they want to go.
That's right. We have our break again. We always come to a natural pause in the conversation, so we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network. I'm Sophia, your host, and we're continuing with Pete Hendrickson, who is helping to disabuse us of our conditioning around the income tax. Pete, now why is it that they are upholding the law as they are? Why people say to me all the time, they're just going to change the law.
Oh, no. Actually, they can't just change the law because the law that's involved here is the Constitution itself. The Constitution prohibits unapportioned direct taxes, and more specifically, it prohibits unapportioned capitations. Tax on revenue in general, on receipts or earnings or what have you, is a capitation. That's the definition of a capitation. And that is, as I said, specifically prohibited in Article 1, Section 9, of the Constitution, and so there's no changing a law to allow this kind of tax to happen. It would require a constitutional amendment. That would be a tough campaign to explain. For that matter, just changing the law would be a pretty tough campaign to explain. What are you going to tell the person that you who's 45% of whose wealth and earnings you snaffled away from them every year of their lives when you want to tell them that, well, we want to change this law so we can actually do this legally now.
So they would be bringing, they would be drawing attention to make it legal. We already think it's legal, right? I just
want
to follow the brain.
Yeah, people have a vague impression that it is. They take it for granted that it must be, otherwise somebody else would have stepped up and stopped it from happening to them. And, you know, that kind of goes to the heart of this whole issue. They think somebody else would have done it. Somebody else would have protected me from this if this were not legal, or if something were going on against my interests that shouldn't be or that was preventable. Somebody else would have saved me from it, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Daddy? Mama?
I know. That's what this
is all about. And, of course, somebody wouldn't. For a variety of reasons. One, you know, the only person that really takes your interest seriously is you. And this subject has been made very complicated, very difficult. It's not insurmountably so, but it has the training, the conditioning, the paradigm that we've been allowed to wallow in our whole lives makes, you know, getting your nose above water difficult. You don't know which direction to go to start out with, but there is a direction to go, and when you get there, you discover actually that the whole process or the whole reality of it is actually quite simple. You know, there's a very complex side if, you know, somebody actually is an income earner, and I use that term in the sense of, you know, what is actually subject to the tax. And when you're not, there's a bright division there. Real complex if you are, and if you're not, everything is very, very straightforward and quite simple. It's just you have to bring your nose up to the air to perceive that distinction. Once you do, suddenly you're out of the water.
Now, Pete, somebody said to me the other day, and I really didn't know how to counter this, because it's part of the whole fix system in a way. He said, well, if you don't file tax returns, if you don't have a tax return to show the bank, then you can't qualify for a mortgage.
Oh, no, no, that's absolutely not the case at all. First of all, you know, understanding the reality of the tax doesn't necessarily imply not filing tax returns, but the point that would have been being made here, the underlying point was if the returns that you're filing don't show income of a certain amount, how are you going to qualify for a mortgage? Well, the fact is, banks don't care about how much income, and when I say that, I'm putting the quote marks around it, income in the sense of the measurement of taxable activity engaged in, not what comes in. Those are two different things. Banks don't care about how much of what qualifies as the product of a taxable activity you have. What they care about is, can you meet the note? Do you have enough cash flow to pay off the note? That's what they care about. And those being two different things, cash flow and income in the legal sense, you know, relevant to the tax, those are two different things. They really don't care about that. It's asking for tax returns and relying on those to indicate cash flow is purely a matter of habit and convenience. Everybody has been so well trained to treat all of their cash flow as income that the banks are accustomed to having to seeing all of anyone's cash flow show up on a tax return. It's not correct. It shouldn't be there in most cases, but they're accustomed to that, and so they ask for it in the same sense that, you know, your doctor asks for a Social Security number when, you know, a new doctor, when you become a new patient. It isn't because they care about your Social Security number. They just want a unique number to identify you by to distinguish you from the last patient that signed up. That's all they care about. And this happens to be a convenient way because they know that, you know, those numbers aren't duplicated. So if they use them, they're going to ensure that they don't have the same number showing up twice and for two different patients. They're perfectly happy to take an alternative number if it's a unique one. So that's simply a matter of understanding what's really being sought and not being misled by the use of terms.
Well, you would show then, how would a person show the bank cash flow? You could
bank
do
statements,
paycheck stuff.
Bank statements. Check stubs.
Yes, but now
affidavits.
We're getting into the subject of the bailout. I think a lot of people are leery of keeping their reserves in a bank.
Understandably.
Yes. So the banks themselves are not really our friends, you know?
Oftentimes that's true. I mean, an honest banker is, you know, an honest businessman or businesswoman and wonderful convenience and resource. And, of course, there are honest bankers out there. However, that industry in many ways, first of all, there are a lot of national banks out there as well, and those are actually federal instrumentalities. And they're not just in the banking business. They're participants in an exploitation that has become kind of systemic to the federal structure. As well as that, the financial industry as a whole, which extends far beyond just bankers, but includes an awful lot of the banking business, is pretty heavily compromised at this point for several different reasons. One, because of an orgy of bad investment, malinvestment, not stuff that represents exploiting bad regulation or anything. There's a lot of that being talked about, but that really isn't so much the case. It was just the financial business has become a gambling business to a great degree, and a lot of people gambled. And right now they happen to have enough connections with the political class to be able to socialize the risks that they took. They were able to privatize the profits, but they're socializing the risks by the bailout and so forth. And these are not good people. These are not good actors. And a lot of them have some chickens coming home to roost right now, and that is really the reason why the idea of relying on a bank as the repository of one's wealth is an iffy proposition.
So, Pete, I'd like you to explain the bailout a little more, especially in terms of how our engaging or employing our own right to freedom will play into this whole idea of the American taxpayer shouldering this burden for the rest of time. And, you know, every new baby born today is going to have to pay $7,000 because of this bailout.
Oh, you're downplaying it, Sophia. It's much more than $7,000.
Well,
but your point is valid. I'm just carping. Yes, every child that believes their earnings to be to be intertwined and the consequence of making use of federal property or privilege is going to end up taking a massive hit over the course of their lifetimes, and it's gonna be a great deal more than $7,000. It's gonna be a great deal more than $17,000 when all is said and done. This process is just beginning, and I tend to think of it as the exploitative class unfurling its golden parachutes and jumping ship here to a great degree. But the point about the relationship of the tax and the bailout is that, you know, frankly, the founders set up the structure of taxation the way they did, the limitations on federal taxation the way they did, in part to protect individual citizens from being pulled into the ill consequences of factionalist schemes. And with each person in a position to control how much of their wealth is diverted to Washington's use, each person can decide just how much exposure they want to suffer as a part of the social process. And those that have taken control of their wealth, they don't have to experience having that, you know, some substantial portion, that $7,000 or $17,000 or whatever the end figure might be, pulled away from them in a direct fashion in order to finance someone else's boondoggle or someone else's swindle, which in most cases is what's involved here. They will suffer the consequence, as long as they continue to use Federal Reserve notes, they'll suffer the consequence of inflation that is resulting from the mechanism by which this bailout is happening. You know, if you add it all up, we've seen about $2 trillion created in the form of, you know, to euphemistically put it, new money. It isn't new money, of course, it's just printed bills representing that many, that much of an addition to the supply of printed bills already in circulation, printed bills and credits on the books already in circulation, thus diminishing the value of those existing bills by a very substantial percentage. I don't know the exact number. On my website at LostHorizons.com, there's a link to the current M3, which is the total of all denominated assets, Federal Reserve denominated assets, in circulation at the moment. And you can see what that total figure is, and then divide $2 trillion into it, and you'll get the percentage of inflation that has resulted just in that last 6 months since the Federal Reserve started pumping in $400 billion, $300 billion, $200 billion, $85 billion to AIG, $400 billion to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and now the $700 billion, the first $700 billion in this new bailout bill is about to start. That is not the cap, by the way, on that bill. That's just the incremental size. And if Paulson decides that it's necessary, he'll crank another $700 billion out after the first one is gone, and doubtless will as well. So a very, very substantial inflation tax is being imposed on everyone for as long as they continue to use Federal Reserve notes. But the as far as the direct, we're taking the 45% of your earnings every year, and we're going to devote this chunk of it to paying off financiers that made bad decisions. That part, a self-actualized American can protect themselves from.
Well, yes, and they can do it by understanding that they are free to begin with, and
that's
that
exactly right.
All they have to do is walk for themselves.
That's right.
And it's not easy to do these filings because of the amount of nervousness that you have around.
That's the only part that's hard, though, Sophia. It actually only takes about 5 minutes to do an educated return responding to allegations of the receipt of income.
Right, but then you have to be prepared to kind of bear the onslaught of arguments that you're going to get.
And a few people do. A few people do, yes.
Most people don't get the arguments. I just want to air these realities for listeners. That
sure.
Not everyone does. It's almost like when you go into the doctor's office, which we shouldn't be doing, really, because of the kind of quote-unquote medicine they're dispensing, and you're told, here's a drug, these are the side effects. Most people don't even think twice.
They don't
say, well, I'd rather not have nausea and weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
They will take the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And why is it that when it comes to income tax, the side effect would be, well, you might be hassled a little bit. Why is it that that becomes more important than exercising the freedom?
Well, the fact is the IRS likes to promote itself as the most feared agency in the U.S. government, which is a way of saying the most feared entity on the planet. And it is. It's cultivated this terror of itself in people just in order to accomplish the very reluctance that we're speaking of right now. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, it works. However, happily, I can't express how delighted I have been over the years to have seen what I'm about to say. Pretty much every single person that has learned the truth about this subject never looks back. There is no, oh, gee, now I know, but you know what? I can't do this. I can't stand up on my feet. I just won't do it. I'm going to, I'm going right back into the barn, or I'm staying right here in the barn, and I'm just going to continue to, let myself be exploited from this point forward. It just doesn't happen. So, courage is not in short supply in this country. We have, Americans are just as all other people are, wonderful, fabulous. We're true human beings, and the thing is, unfortunately, lots of us don't understand this some important truths, and so they don't actualize that aspect of themselves.
Pete, are you saying that those who finally do submit a filing, the first filing, this way. We'll call it the CTC way, although it's Congress's way.
It's the
Constitution's way. They never go back. And I can see that. But it's the taking that first step. I know a lot of people who've read your book, and they have put it down. And they have said, all right, I get it, but I'm not going to do it. So
well,
that, to me, is the difficult. That's the abyss that has to be leapt by...
It is, and I'm not surprised to hear that you know a few people who have not found it in themselves to stand up yet, but the next time that they come to where they're about to fill out that form, and they're, you know, the choice is between lying on it, essentially, and you know, doing something wrong with it and doing something right, then that's when we'll see.
All right, and we're coming up on another short break, and we'll continue in 3 minutes with Pete Hendrickson. To Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and we are entering, well, not quite, our second hour with Pete Hendrickson, the tax expert. Pete, is it fair to call you an expert?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, some people don't like to be called an expert, but you seem to always have an answer. We have a caller, actually. Would you like to take his call?
Sure, absolutely.
This is Jim from Missouri. Are you on the line?
Sure.
How are you today?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Pete, how are you?
Good.
I've been listening in, and it is fearful. It was hard for me to do it my first time. But over the time, over the last couple of years, you just, once you know, it's kind of like the movie The Matrix, you know. Once you take the red pill, it's over.
Well said,
you know, Jim. And I do understand there's a lot of people that are fearful. I've had people contact me to see how it was going with me. And I've been one of those that have been selected out. So I've had a pretty rough haul with it. But
there's no going back, is there, Jim?
I'm sorry?
There's no going back, is there?
You can't.
You can't.
You can't.
Truth is the truth. And, you know, it becomes a choice of, you know, your personal integrity and your dignity, or, you know, the inconveniences associated with enough liberty.
Well, I think one of the biggest problems is cognitive dissonance. It's hard for people to sit back and think, oh, my gosh, they've stolen all this money from me all my life.
Yeah.
And they
people
just
don't want to admit that. You're absolutely right. That's a very good point. There is a reluctance. Nobody likes to face the fact that they've been, in many ways, made a fool of. I mean, I don't like to use that expression. It's too harsh.
Yeah.
It isn't that you know, anyone was outright, you know, dumb about this. They you know, there are all kinds of things that we just sort of accept because we get them at you know, in our baby bottles, so to speak, and they're with us our whole lives, and we just, you know, we don't look at them. But it is true that when the time comes that this is presented to someone and they're challenged to look at that thing, the implications of it will be daunting.
Can I ask Jim a question?
Sure.
Jim, would you like to explain how you were singled out and what kind of hoops they put you through?
I've gotten the frivolous letters. I actually went through the administrative process in my state, and it was a total fiasco. They weren't going to follow the law. I haven't decided where I'm going to go with that yet, but you know, I've got a notice of deficiency filed on me, and they wanted me to appeal to the tax court, and I said, no, I don't need to do that. You've got my return; it's accurate. I signed it under penalty of perjury, give me my money back. Of course, I haven't heard back from them yet, but now they're working on my 2006, and pretty interesting. They sent some paperwork to the company I work with.
We are entering our little top of the hour break, Jim. Can you just hold on and
sure.
continue on the other side? Thank
sure.
you.
Sure.